Taylor, Reel 21. We're talking about your time in the Oldham Battalion, Home Guard, you were mentioning that you used to dig the perimeter defences.
Yes,
it was about what size, what shape were these defences?
Well, it depended on the on what the ground was like. They were very rocky over there, you know. Oh, yes, they weren't trenches in the manner that you think of them, as straight or with... what do they call them?
Bays.
Bays, nothing like that.
What were they like?
It was they were covering places. There was machine gun posts had been erected.
Were they concrete emplacements
built? No, they were built. There's so much stone and rock up there that. And it's part of the defences of Manchester, you know, because it stretched more miles from there.
They weren't continuous lines, they were strong points.
Strong points, more or less.
And they were just sort of trench-like
things?
Oh,
yes, yes.
But no concrete used?
No, you must understand this, that people who were digging, they were all except for the people who were construction workers, they were all amateurs, you know.
Who told you where to dig?
The powers that be, they taped it out, and somebody, I don't know.
Now, one person was killed.
We did what we were told.
There was one person killed, I believe, while you were
doing
it.
Oh, yes.
Can you tell us that story?
The trench was, and it was very rocky. And you got your loose rocks and then throw them up to form a parapet. And this fellow was doing that. And he bent down to pick one of these stones up, but someone else, throwing a stone up, and it didn't go high enough, caught the top, fell back and fell on this fellow's head, and it killed him. That was very sad, that was. And he should never have been in. He was... He had a very good job... head of a department, but he wasn't athletic at all, you know. He was a very sly man. It was a great pity, that was. Very willing, but died.
Now, what other jobs were you on? You've mentioned the patrolling for looking for sabotage and the digging of the defences. What about actual guard duties? Did you have those?
Well, yes. Important installations.
Such as?
Gasworks. Gasometer.
There's one just near here. Do you mean that one?
That is a big one. In fact, that's the biggest, second biggest gas holder in the world, that, you know.
And you'd be on guard?
Oh, yes, yes.
And what would you do when you were on guard?
Well, you'd stop anybody from approaching it, you know. Oh, yes.
Were you armed?
Oh, yes, you were armed.
Did you have live ammunition?
Yes, live ammunition on those in installations like that.
But not up the spout?
Oh, no.
And did you have a hut or anything?
Well, there was some part of the installation would be set up. Like the gasworks there, there was an office building was set aside for the guards at night, you know.
And how many of them would there be?
Well, it depended on the size of the installation you were guarding, you know.
Say the gasworks.
Well, the gasworks, yeah, about perhaps a dozen or more. More than that.
And you had a dozen on each night?
Oh, yes, yes.
And what time would you start?
Well, you'd start about... perhaps half past eight or something like that.
Would there be a guard on during the day, or was that just...
There would be... but there's the people are working on you in the day, you know. There would be the ordinary security men on the gate or something like that. But this was on the installations themselves.
So you started at 8:30.
Yeah, and knock off about 6 o'clock.
And would you patrol?
Oh yes, yes, you patrol. And that is when the time when we used to. We used to have suppers then, you know. It was a good thing.
This is from the amenities fund.
Oh, yes, out of the amenities fund.
Now, who started the amenities fund?
I started, and I shouldn't say that, but I did.
It was your idea, was it?
It was my idea.
And how did it work?
It worked very well indeed. It worked so well But they tried to copy it in all the other companies, but they never got off the ground.
Did you start it for your platoon or for your company?
I started it with the platoon for a start off. And then when I realised we had such a variety of people, who had so many activities and chances of getting all the stuff, I thought it was a good thing. And we were never short. We were always something. Always something every night for somebody.
And what would you provide from it?
Well,
for the guards, say.
Sausage and mash. That was a favourite thing. And that was a fairly regular one.
Who'd cook it?
Well, the ladies, wife used to sometimes.
So the amenities fund would provide the money to pay
food. Oh, yes,
and then it'd be cooked. And who'd take it to the guard?
You'd send the guard up for it, you know. Because you were never far away, because you looked after your own area. And when it get about 10 o'clock, just before, or round about 10, they'd go for supper. And usually, he changed the guard about that time, so you got two lots would be feeding at once instead of fetching anybody in off the streets, you know. Those who were coming off guard just coming off guard when the others had finished their supper and they were going on the changeover, you know.
When you say going off guard, they were on guard all night.
Oh, yes.
But the people who were patrolling the border came in. Is that what you mean?
Oh, yes, yes.
You don't mean the ones going off were going home?
Oh, no, no, nobody going home, no. And we didn't go home until you dismissed the guard at 6 o'clock next morning. And usually that was when the workforce were beginning to arrive at wherever it is you're...
You say once you used to, at one place you had leaks. Could you just tell that?
Yeah, that was at it was a park, and the headquarters were in the, I think it was in the music room of this park, and there was a kitchen with cooking facilities. But yeah, you'd got to provide the stuff to cook, and. I had a brother who was a gardener there, and he used to grow leeks there, and he used to dig these leeks up right here, and they washed them, cut them up and fried them. It was smell of half an hour away.
What would you fry them in?
Yes, those who were on guard, they knew they'd try and get a bit of fat from somewhere, from home or anywhere. Some fat and some water in this, and a big lid on top of this pan, and of course about this high, and as it cooked they went lower and lower and lower, of course. But that was a good supper, that was.
Now, you tell me that the officers used to try and arrive.
The orderly officer would try and arrive just about the time we were ready for distributing this. And these were people, the officers were usually people from the departments in the town, or teachers, part of education officials, who were rather a bit upper crust, you know. So but they weren't so upper crust, and it did prevent them coming eating our leak.
And they'd come round, this orderly officer would go round his section of guards, would he? Now, why were you guarding a park?
Well, it wasn't just the park. There were some installations round about there, but that was the headquarters of the particular platoon.
What other installations, what type of, besides the gasworks?
Well, Frantis, of course, Frantis had their own.
What, sorry?
Frantis had their own.
Frantis?
Oh, yes, this down, that was down the...
That's German. A factory, is it?
Oh, yes, it was a very big electrical work. Oh, Maxwell's bought it now for his printing work. Oh, a wide variety of things.
How often a week would you be on these guards?
Well, you'd be on guard once a week.
Wasn't it tiring the day?
Tiring. It became very tiring, and the casualty rate was quite high, you know, because...
What way?
Well, people were so tired that they were interfering with their work.
You had to go to work the day before and the day after.
They had right away. In my own case, now we started work then, but whilst the flat was on, they increased the hours of production at the mills and they'd start about 7 o'clock. And it was, I didn't think anything unusual about it. The guard had dismissed, come home, take my uniform off, have a bit of something to eat and go to work right away to be at work at 7 o'clock. And I'd be on guard on that. You did get some sleep if you were lucky. It was the usual sentry to do 1 and 4 off, you know, but not a lot of rest, you know.
Was it boring?
Yes. It depends. Some became quite interesting, some of them, you know.
In what way?
Well, it depended who were on, whether they were interesting people, you know. Right.
As you went on, did people start to drop out of the Home Guard?
Yes, some did.
For what reasons?
For one thing, you could drop out. There were no prosecution if you dropped out. They lost their enthusiasm for it and yeah, what was going on. But not a great lot.
You were never tempted to drop out?
No, I was never tempted to drop out. In fact, I took a dim view of anybody that did. In fact, at the final parade of the Home Guard, I'm sure there were as many parades in the final parade as there was at the first one.
So you didn't find you... Some people would drop out, but you get new ones
coming
in.
Oh, yes, yes.
Now, one thing you mentioned to me was that Churchill had a big influence, his speeches. Could you
the
tell me?
The Oldham Parish Church, who had a... it was a church parade, a service, a Wings for Victory or something. I don't really know what it was. It was to celebrate something. And the service was to be held on Sunday afternoon. And the whole battalion were going to this church. And... we marched it from here right to the town, you know. And
would the townsfolk turn out to look at
it? Oh, yes. Ooh, when there was a parade on, even today, I don't care today, if you put a parade on, there'll be a crowd, but that was then. And the pit, the coal pit Home Guard, they were rum beggars. They paraded with the water bottles, and they were the only ones that did. And I've said many times, they were the only sensible ones, because Sunday lunchtime, they'd been drinking, of course, and we went to church, and there's a big balcony at the old church, and we were on the balcony, just like they were. I don't know what happened if nature took hold of ours. I know what happened with them, because they peed in the water bottles.
And that's why they brought them?
That's why they brought them. There was some very, very wise Solomon had told them that.
Did you enjoy the parades?
Yes, of course I did. We got a lot of fun out of them.
Were you proud of being a Home Guard?
Yes, of course I was. Yes, I would have stopped in all that thing if they hadn't been. They used to do all sorts of things. And I'll tell you something else we did. We were very good at fundraising. Although I say it, I shouldn't. I'm not a bad organiser. And at that time, there was a branch of the pay corps in one of the cotton mills down here. Now, the pay corps attracts... it doesn't attract people who were navvies or anything like that. They're usually people who've had what we call sitting down jobs. And there were artists and things like that, plenty of them. And they had these lot had. And they formed entertainments group. Now it was very, very good. They became known as the Amponians.
How do you spell that?
A-M-P-O-N-I-A-N-S. Amponians was the name. And I remember them. I remember them buying out of their canteen. They bought a grand piano, but it was in London. And they sent a wagon down from here, picked up in London. And everywhere they went, they used to take this grand piano, and used to unscrew the legs. And now the pianist, I think he was called Zimbler, but I'm not quite sure. Oh, but what a pianist. He was marvellous. And in fact, they were all good. They were good artists, and they had a very, very good dance band. Oh, also, that was the name of the dance band as well. And they used to go about giving shows for charity. I've organised quite a lot of them for different charities, local charities.
During the war?
Oh, yes. And I was very friendly with the manager of a local cinema. And I used to arrange, I didn't overdo it, of course, I'd arrange now and again for these lot to put a show on. Always on Sunday night, after chapels and churches had come out, this was on. And it was always a full house, always. It was, I don't know what it would have cost to hire them, but it cost nothing, they put it on. And
who did you organise? Which charities did you give? Were they war charities?
All war charities.
What sort of thing?
Funds, but all there were all sorts of things. I can't just recall actually one in particular, but I must have done a dozen in the time of different kinds.
And they'd make quite a lot of money.
I think they did. But I never handled the money. Never handled any money. I was very particular about that.
How did you make sure that nobody got their hands on who shouldn't?
You didn't. You just trusted. The manager of the picture hall, I trusted him. And I wasn't of mine running this one to one man band. There were quite a few of us, did it? You know. And I always made sure. There used to be a bit of higgledy-piggledy with this because you'd got to have permission from the commanding officer for these people to perform. Now, you've got to keep this commanding officer, you've got to keep him sweet. And I used to get a bottle of whiskey. I had a source where I could get a bottle of whiskey. And the commanding officer always came to these dues, and he always sat in the middle of one row with his officers, and they were right. They were very good dudes. And we used to say, the proprietor, the manager, he used to go and he'd say, he was called Brown. And we said to the colonel, excuse me, sir, Mr. Brown, Mr. Brown wants to, if you'd like to have a drink with him. Well, let's see where you jump up. And he may take one of his senior officers, he might, one of the captains or something, or the major. The junior officers, no way. And he was very down to earth, man. He said, no way, them guzzling buggers, we shan't get any. And they used to drink this bottle of whiskey. It was all right. It suited me. We got the whole show put on for the price of a bottle of whiskey. The proprietor of the hall, he gave us the use of the hall, and he provided the checkers and.
What was the hall called? The cinema then.
Scala, La Scala.
And it was a cinema hall, no?
A cinema it was, yeah.
And you did this quite.
Sunday evening it would be, yeah. Anyway, we had some great times with that. And I got very friendly with the officers at this place because I used to I got friendly with them because I got to know a lot of the artists, and they were sort of a first class.
Now, were you still just a private in the Home Guard at this time?
No, I became a corporal, and I could have moved up, but occasionally I used to have to work weekends. Well, it wouldn't be fair if the NCO wasn't on parade with them on Sunday when they were training, so I never did. I never did accept the rank of sergeant. I could have quite easily.
You said you went on some other sort of exercises on a Sunday. What sort of other... Well, besides this digging of the trenches, what other things?
Well, there was one very special one. Was it was a presumed attack on the inner defences of Manchester. And at that time, we were the enemy. We. And we started off from here. Oh, and it was right round, miles round, and closing in onto Manchester. A lot of things happened. It was funny, you know. We overran A.V. Rose, which was a big aerial manufacturer. We overran during the course of the... Much to the disgust of their Home Guard, because they weren't in handy. They were supposed to be the defence. Oh, they didn't like that at all.
How did they work, this so-called fighting? How was it worked out?
It was by numbers. If there were three of you and there were only one of them, you'd won. That was the sort of thing. But it was a matter of...
Was it realistic at all?
Oh, very. They had thunder flashes. Now, anybody that's ever heard of thunder flashes, it makes a hell of a noise. And when we got into Manchester, the centre of Manchester, I remember I was in a group that were moving. No, we were all in the top end of Portland Street, which is, there's Market Street on Portland Street. They're both main thoroughfares. And they were very, very big warehouses in Portland Street, ooh, massive things. And the defenders were on top of them with thunder flashes. And they were dropping them. Now, you couldn't stop the life of a city for the sake of having a Home Guard exercise.
I was going to ask what was happening to the civilians.
Chaos. Chaos it was. The girls loved it. Oh, they enjoyed it. The people out of the men accepted it, but my chief impression of that were the American soldiers. There were American soldiers there. And they'd come in from Burtonwood. Burtonwood was a very big American base. And I remember a group of coloured Americans walking up, coming up Portland Street from Central Station, which is the bottom of Portland Street. And these on the top of the building dropped thunder flashes on. Panic. There was a group of perhaps 10 of these Yanks. Well, these thunder flashes, they were terrible things. They burst it right over their head, you know. They stopped running. I don't think they've stopped yet. And I heard one, Jesus, he set up running. Where they went to, I don't know, but that was very, very realistic, that was. I bet they thought so.
It sounds as if you, the attackers, were doing quite well.
We did quite well. We rendezvoused right up Piccadilly Yard. I think we'd won. I think we'd broke through. I think so. But it became quite a lot of fun at it, you know. And it was a talking point for weeks. And, of course, the powers that be said they were evaluating the exercise for future effort. It took quite a long time to prepare, you know.
Did you do many exercises like that?
Not a great lot, no. I remember one, like in the fields, they're all fields beyond here. and we were moving across a open field, and it was in the spring, and you know, they muck fields out of, in the spring, they put manure on. Now it's all chemical stuff, these piles of manure. And there was a hare broke cover, and it ran right towards the line that we were moving. We drew ammunition, we had rifles, drew ammunition. And this hare, one jump of air, it's as far as this room, you know. And one fella got his rifle, and he threw it, and he was breaking in between him and the next man. And he threw it at this hare, get there, and it right in the middle of a muck heap. Oh, God. But he dug it out, it's full of sloppy cow muck, all the, from the breach of the, God. That caused a row because he kept rubbing it on the grass until he got some of it off, you know. And then when we pulled up for lunch at a pub, the rifles were all, they were piled or leaned against a wall. This fella, he went as far away as he could, changed it for somebody else's rifle and come back. All went well till we come to fall in, and the people going to get the rifle. And whoever got this monkey rifle, dear, dear, dear. You could hear this row going on down the ranks. And some dirty bugger. that was funny, you know.
And what were you practicing when you were going across the field? Just.
Not extended order, you know.
Did you do much of that?
Not a great lot. No, not a great lot.
Were you able? I mean, you'd be between 40 and 45. Oh, yeah. Were you fit enough to cope with it?
Oh, yes. I were very fit.
Did it make you fitter, the Home Guard?
I think so, yeah.
And what about, I asked you earlier, I don't think you heard me, what you said that Churchill had a big influence on you all at the time. Churchill.
Well, he used to be, now and again, and there is certainly a record of Churchill's speeches to the British people. There's a record, and they are very, very inspiring. And I don't think, it was always advertised that when Churchill was speaking, he was always speaking at 9 o'clock. There were never anybody on the streets. The streets were empty. They were either in their own homes or in the pubs. Nobody was serving beer till after Churchill had said his piece.
On the radio?
Oh, very, very inspiring. Oh, yes, they had radio, no television then. Very inspiring they were. And I tell you, there's copies of them on tape now, you know. I know we. There's one in Tenerife, I know.
Were there any other politicians who were important at the time to you?
Let me try and think. No, not politician. Montgomery became rather household name.
Did people mind that Churchill was a Conservative? Because it's not a Conservative area.
They didn't mind. In fact... They didn't mind it at all until after the war. They gave him the freedom of all of them, and he never came for it. No way. Because after the war was over, and mind it, during the war, we relied on Churchill. He was the cornerstone. When the war was over, and it was the first election after the war, he was defeated as the Prime Minister, and Clement Attlee became the Prime Minister. And before the election, during the process of the election, he came to Oldham, and passing up the main road from Manchester through Hollywood, and he passed the gates of Frantis, the big electrical place, and they